Fiction Story, The Stranger, by Alma J. Yates. Lugging a bucket of warm, foamy milk, I stepped from the barn and slammed the heavy door behind me. A chill wind blasted across the barnyard and tore at the buttons on my coat, almost snatching my cap away. Ducking my head into my collar, I pushed toward the house, possessed with an anxious longing to escape the late autumn's icy breath. I glanced at the gray, forbidding sky and hoped it wouldn't snow, at least not until Ma and Pa and the girls returned from Uncle Tommy's. I was almost at the house before I saw him. He was shuffling tiredly down the dirt lane that came from the highway to our farm. Squinting against the onslaught of the wind, I watched him approach, all the while loathing him for coming. I didn't know him, and yet he was familiar, not as a person, but as a representative of the motley mob of defeated wanderers who had stopped at our door in the past. I recognized the slumped shoulders, the hollow cheeks, the sunken, searching eyes, the rumpled, ill-fitting clothing, the dusty shoes, and the apologetic reluctance, all of which characterized his singular breed. They were cast off byproducts of these lean depression years of the 1930s. Their only crime had been misfortune and circumstances. Nevertheless, my own selfishness caused me to despise them. "Hi, son," he greeted me, a cautious humor in his voice. "This wouldn't be the Lorenzo Platt place, would it?" I glanced toward the empty house. No one would know, I told myself. Still, I couldn't bring myself to lie, even to him. "Yeah, it is," I mumbled. "I wasn't sure," he said with a smile that revealed a chipped front tooth. "The barn wasn't finished before, and the house wasn't painted." "We did that last summer," I replied tartly, trying to discourage conversation. "Sure looks nice." Uneasily, he looked around, obviously stalling. I knew what he wanted. They were all the same. Pa had never needed more excuse than that they were hungry, discouraged, displaced, or cold. He had always brought them into the house, given them a chair by the stove, a place at the table, and a home for the night. I had especially disliked these gaunt, faceless guests who intruded and disrupted our home. If Pa had been content to offer them a bowl of beans and a place on the front step to eat, I could have ignored their intrusion, but that wasn't Pa's way. When night fell, Pa didn't send them off to the barn loft. He offered them a bed in the house, usually mine. I would sleep on the couch, always resenting the one who supplanted me. "Why do we have to do it?" I had accused Pa one afternoon while we were stacking hay. "Why can't they find their own place and their own food? We've got to work for ours. Let them work for theirs." Pa had picked up a fork full of hay and carried it to the corner of the stack and said gently, "Every night and morning when I pray, I thank the Lord we have work that we can provide. We're not rich, son. No one is these days, but we have sufficient. I wouldn't trade places with any of those men. It isn't their fault that the winds blew the land away and tore them from their farms. It isn't their fault that these are hard times." "No, son, I don't condemn them. My heart aches for them, and as long as I have a single chicken, a meager cup of beans, or a crust of bread, those men won't leave here hungry." "But, Pa," I protested warmly, "you do all that for the folks in the ward, too. Whenever they need something, they always come to you. It just isn't fair, even if you are the bishop. But I wouldn't mind that because they're our folks, our neighbors and our friends, but not these others." Pa didn't listen. He continued to reach out to them, and they continued to come. Although they were complete strangers, they all seemed to know that here was a home for the night. As I stood in the cold wind eyeing this new stranger, this intruder, I was determined to send him away as I had wanted to do the others. The man stuffed his hands into his pockets, glanced at me, and then kicked at the dust with the toe of his battered boot. "Is your Pa here, son?" I shook my head. "He's over at my Uncle Tommy's helping out. My Ma and sisters are with him. Uncle Tommy and Aunt Lucerne are both sick. Been that way for a week or so. Won't be back till tomorrow afternoon. I'm here alone." I watched the spark of hope in his eyes flicker and then die. He glanced about the place. Like all the others, he was too proud to ask. I wasn't about to extend an invitation. Not today, when the decision was completely mine. You can come back tomorrow, I suggested with callous indifference. He'll be back then. I see, the man mumbled, knowing what coming back tomorrow implied. He looked back down the long, dusty lane to the highway, then peered over my shoulder toward the house. There was a longing not easily concealed in his famished eyes. He turned toward the barn and then back at me. But there was no encouragement in my unflinching stare. This man represented the whole mob that had imposed upon me, crowded me out at the kitchen table, and forced me from my bed. Sending him down the road was a vindictive retaliation against all of them. "Well, I guess I'll be on my way," he said more to himself than to me. As he turned to go, I said, "I'll tell Pa you stopped." The man nodded his head and waved weakly. "You've got a nice place here," he commented, motioning to the barn and house with his hand. "I've got a boy about your age watching after my place, too, what's left of it. It's not as big and nice as yours, but he's got plenty to do. I sure hope he's getting along. Well, tell your Pa I stopped by. He won't remember me, but he helped me once before." I didn't watch him pass through the front gate and start down the lane. Not even I could do that. With as much indifference as I could muster, I stepped up on the porch, put the white pad in the strainer, and poured the milk in, listening to it drip into the clean bucket below. Suddenly I thought of Pa. Just before he had climbed into the truck and driven over to Uncle Tommy's, he had given me his last-minute instructions. Now his words flashed into my mind, and I couldn't drive them out. "Son, I'll trust you to watch over things. I wish I didn't have to leave you alone this long, but we've got to help Uncle Tommy out. If we don't get the rest of that corn in, his cattle aren't going to have much this winter. I don't know how good it is now. I know the frost got a lot of it. If you need anything, run over to Brother Ramsey's place. I told him you'd be here alone." "Pa, I can do it," I protested, hurt that he had deemed it necessary to speak with Brother Ramsey. I was 17 and felt capable of taking care of things for the 3 days. "I know, son. You can handle things as well as I can." His unconditional confidence shocked me now. A gnawing shame bore into my soul. The last drops of milk pattered into the bucket. Without thinking, I glanced up and gazed down the lane toward the departing figure, hunched and plodding against the wind. I don't know why, but I thought of his son. It was strange that I had never considered that these wanderers could possibly have families, folks who cared, who wondered whether they were safe, had enough to eat or a place to lay their heads. Suddenly, so unexpectedly, he became a real person. A horrifying vision leapt into my mind's stage, a vision I could not close my eyes to. The man was transformed. He was no longer a stranger, a mere wanderer, tacitly begging for a place to stop for the night. He became Pa, and I was the selfish youth who had refused him even a corner in the barn. It was a shattering revelation, one that staggered me with its vividness, one that made me loathe the merciless boy who had sent him away. Leaving the milk on the porch, I started down the lane on a run, impelled by an awful dread that this man would escape me in the cold, dreary dusk. The terrible realization of my heartless act haunted me. "Hey, mister," I gasped when I was still several yards away. The man stopped and turned around. "I didn't ask you if you wanted to spend the night. You can, you know." "Well, I didn't mean to," the man stammered. "I'm not much of a cook," I pressed, "but I can give you something and a place to stay." He looked down the road as though debating. "It's getting colder. There'll be frost for sure tonight," I pointed out. To my relief, he came back with me. Neither of us spoke as we returned to the house. I invited him in and stirred up the coals in the stove and insisted he pull up a chair to warm himself. I could tell he was cold through and through. He rubbed his hands together and reached out to the warmth, beckoning it to penetrate his chilled body. "Ma left some lima beans," I apologized, wishing Ma were there to fix something nice. "But there's bread and we've got lots of milk. I can't fix anything like Ma, but it will fill you up." The man nodded. "Anything, son. Beans sound good." We ate supper in silence. I gave him 3 bowls of beans, a half loaf of Ma's bread, and a quart of milk. He wouldn't have eaten it all, but I insisted. I could see he was hungry, and I knew he wouldn't ask for more. "I didn't mean to make a pig of myself," he apologized. We don't eat steaks and stuff, but what we've got we have plenty of, and you're welcome to it. By the time the work was done, darkness had settled, and there was nothing to do but go to bed. "Son," he began, "if you've got a blanket, I can go out to the barn and bed down. I'll get up early in the morning and be on my way and won't have to even bother you. You've been real good to me, son. You can't sleep out there. Pa never lets folks sleep out there, not when we've got plenty of room in the house. I'll fix you up." "Then I can lay down by the stove," he replied. "No, mister, we've got beds. Come in here." I led him into my room. "I think there's enough quilts. If you need more, we've got plenty." "Isn't this your room, son?" "Not tonight," I explained simply. The man seemed embarrassed and unsure of himself. "I appreciate all this, son. I stopped by here once before on my way to California looking for work. Your pa took me in just like you've done." He took a deep breath and shook his head. "You know, there's a lot of mean folks in this old world. Folks that don't care about anyone but themselves. Folks like that could turn a man sour on everybody." "I know. When I was looking for work, sometimes I was bullied and cheated and sent on my way. I'd get real mad. All I was doing was trying to make enough to send back to my family and keep them going. But these other folks didn't care. As soon as the fruit was picked or the cotton in, then they sent us on our way. It wasn't my fault I was in hard times. I got to hating." He paused and looked down at his dry, calloused hands. "Then I remembered your pa. He didn't make me eat on the front steps and sleep in the hay in a ditch like most folks. I was somebody to him." He smiled wanly and brushed his eyes with the back of his hand. "I had to come back. You see, I'm on my way back to Arkansas to get my family, going to take them out to California, but I had to stop here." I nodded my head and looked at the floor. For a moment, there was a heavy silence. "Well," I mumbled, "if you need anything, mister, just call." "Son," the stranger said just as I turned to go, "you got a good pa. You're Mormon folks, aren't you?" I nodded. Out of his coat pocket, he pulled a worn copy of the Book of Mormon. "Your pa gave me this. I haven't read it yet because I don't read too good, but I've kept it with me. I've heard a lot of bad things about you Mormons, but I haven't believed any of it." He rubbed his rough, chapped hands over the book's cover. "They said you weren't Christians and such." He wagged his head. "But I don't believe them. How could I? I've met just one Christian man in my life. It was your pa. I'm going to get my boy to read me this book, and maybe then I'll find out why your pa is so different." The next morning, I was up early to milk. The stranger was up and dressed and ready to head down the road, but I said he couldn't go until he'd had breakfast. I milked, and he went with me and helped me feed the stock and strain the milk. All the time he talked about his boy and his family. All the while I could picture Pa talking about Ma and the girls and me like that man talked about his folks. I shuddered to think I'd almost sent him away. After breakfast, I put a loaf of bread in a brown paper sack and wrapped a chunk of cheese in wax paper and handed them to him. "I wish I could give you more," I said. "You're just like your pa, son. Your pa could be proud of you," he said hoarsely. With that, he turned and started toward the front gate. As I watched him start down the lane, it seemed his head was a little higher. His shoulders were not so stooped, and his step had more spring in it. I didn't take my eyes off him until he reached the highway and walked over a little rise out of sight. It was late afternoon when Ma and Pa and the girls came home. I was out in the barn cleaning the stable. Pa came out as soon as he took the things from the truck into the house. "How'd things go, son?" "Good." I leaned the fork against the wall. "A man came."
"Who?"
I shook my head. "I didn't ask. He was just passing through, like the others." "You put him up, didn't you?" There was an edge of panic in his voice, as though he was worried that someone in need had come and he had not been there to help. "Yeah," I replied. "I did what I could." Pa sighed, then took a deep breath, obviously relieved. "I didn't finish cleaning out the pig pen, though. I ran out of time." There was no rebuke in Pa's look or tone of voice. "There will be time for that. If you looked after the man, that's all that matters for now." Suddenly, I felt hot tears burning in my eyes. I didn't even care that Pa saw me. I didn't care that I was 17 and supposed to be grown up. I felt something inside me warm and reassuring, something that almost burst my soul. Pa put his arm around my shoulders and pulled me down on a bale of straw beside him. He didn't say anything for a long time. We just sat there together, knowing what the other was feeling. I knew Pa's eyes were filled with tears too, but I wasn't ashamed. In a strange kind of way, I was proud we could shed tears together. Finally, he squeezed my shoulder tight and whispered, "Son, you're a man now. You've proved it today." I swallowed hard, remembering the stranger, glad he had come. I offered a silent prayer that before nightfall he would find another man like Pa. End of the fiction story, The Stranger, by Alma J. Yates.